Welcome to the Gerald Brooks Leadership Podcast, a deep dive into biblical leadership with pastor and author, Dr. Gerald Brooks.
Hi, this is Gerald Brooks. Thank you so much for joining me for another podcast. Before I jump into the lesson, I just want to take a moment and let you know that my new book, Keys for Effective Living, is out. You can go to my webpage, GeraldBrooksMinistries.com, and you can order a copy there. I think this book is going to help a lot of people. It deals with 10 concepts from Colossians chapter 1. Each one is a really unpacking of truth there that I think would be helpful in a lot of ways. If you're a pastor, I think you could teach each one of these as I did, and it would be so helpful to a congregation. If you had a small group, I think it would be wonderful for them, that it would be a great way to launch into some deep material and Colossians and be able to articulate and develop some thoughts that I think would be helpful to a small group. That being said, that's all on GeraldBrooksMinistries.com. Today, I want to take a moment. I want to talk to you about leadership in action. Leadership in action. There's an old axiom that says this: leaders are readers. Now, that's true. I've never met a leader that wasn't a prolific reader. However, the antithesis of that is also true. All readers are not leaders. So why is it that on one side of the equation we can say leaders are readers, and yet it's true on the other side of the equation that all readers are not leaders? Well, that axiom has to be clarified. It has to be clarified based on the fact that studies show that when leaders read, what they read is they read biographies. They spend a few moments and they really get into biographies more than anything else. Now, why are biographies important to a leader? Because they're not abstract. They're concrete. They don't show life from a distance. They show it up close. Biographies show us what life is in action. It shows us the thoughts. It shows us the moments. It shows us the emotions. It shows us the context. And so you get to see people as they're living out life in a very, very specific moment. You get to see the good of them, the bad of them. And as a result of that, you get to be able to make decisions based on that biography. Is this what I want to do in the future? Is this not what I want to do? So leaders are readers, but they love reading action. They love reading life moments. Well, that's what we're going to do today. We're going to look at a life moment in the life of the Apostle Paul. Now, this life moment is in Acts chapter 27. Acts chapter 27 is going to give us a play where we're going to get to see Paul up close in some very intense moments of life and how he began to lead in the midst of it. And so in Acts 27, verses 1 and 2, it says this: "And when it was decided that we should sail to Italy, they delivered Paul and some of the other prisoners to one named Julius." The first thought is simple. Influence is a leader's best friend. Influence is a leader's best friend. If you have influence, you have the capability of leading. If you don't have influence, you're probably incapable of leading at that particular moment. Now, what's interesting here is that this whole story is going to be about Paul growing in his influence. It's going to be about how he grew in his influence. Yet, what Paul's going to do is going to defy the majority of all thoughts that are ever communicated about influence. See, here's what we tend to think. Well, if I had that position, I would have influence. Well, if I had that power, I would have influence. Well, if I had that platform, I would have influence. But in this story, Paul doesn't have any of those. He doesn't have a position, he doesn't have power, and he doesn't have a platform. Paul is a prisoner. Prisoners don't have position. They don't have power, and they don't have platform. And yet, from his position as a prisoner, he's going to go from the lowest position, and yet he's going to have influence that will dictate the very ending of this story. So how does that happen? How does someone that doesn't have all the things that people think you've got to have to be influential. How did they get influence? How did Paul, no position, no power, no platform, he's a prisoner, create influence? And it's just simple. Influence comes from caring. It just comes from caring. It comes from being in a moment where literally people begin to feel that you're caring. Now, here's how it works. Caring starts with our heart. People have to feel it. And that's what's going to go on in this story. Eventually, people are going to feel that Paul cared. Secondly, it involves our habits. People have to be helped by it. The things that we do, that we say we care about, we have to have the habits to be able to help them succeed in what they need to do. And then if we have a heart where they feel it, we have habits where they're helped by it, that creates hope so that they're touched by it. And when you have a heart where they feel it, habits where they're helped by it, and hope where they're touched by it, what happens is this. People know that you care. And when you care, you have influence. So Paul's going to have none of the things that people in our society think make you influential, and yet he's going to have influence. Now, with that being said, we go to verses 9 and 10. It says, when much time had been spent. Another thing that you find out about leaders is leaders understand the clock. See, leaders are good at time. They're good at appreciating time, esteeming time, recognizing the key moments in time. They are good at the clock. See, leaders don't waste time. I tell people all the time that if you're going to lead people, one of the things that you're going to have to do is to show that you care about their time. And anytime you show up late to a meeting, you are saying that your time is more important than their time, that your life is more important than their life. And what you're saying is, I don't care. And what did we say influence is? Influence is when they know you care. And so after much time had been spent, see, every circumstance in life has a timeline. That timeline is ticking. Now, when you have problems and you have people, which are the two things leaders have, leaders will always have problems and they will always have people, there is going to be a time to act. And so as a leader, you have to be able to distinguish the time, you have to be able to get the time right, and you have to be able to read the clock correctly. But then we're going to see another principle. And that principle is found in Acts 27, verses 11 and 12. In there it says, nevertheless, the centurion was more persuaded by the helmsman and the owner of the ship than by the things spoken by Paul. A third principle here is, if people do not instantly follow, do not quit. Don't quit. Now, in the midst of this story, Paul begins to show people that he cares. He begins to understand there's a clock, and if we react to that clock, we can make the best of this, but the centurion isn't going to listen to him. So in leadership, you understand not everyone's going to buy in, and everyone that does buy in doesn't buy in immediately. So in leadership, not everyone's going to buy in, and not everyone's going to buy in immediately. I will get calls from young leaders who will say, well, I'm leading, but people will not follow me. Okay, that's great. When people don't follow you, don't give up leading. Just keep leading. Someone says, but they're not following me. That's all right. They didn't immediately follow Paul. And Paul had a pretty high game of leadership. But here's what it's saying. People don't always buy in the first time. And people don't always buy in quickly. But if you keep leading over a period of time, most people will buy in. And so if people don't instantly follow, don't quit. Don't stop. Keep leading. And so Paul begins to work through this. And as he works through this, he understands, I'm a prisoner. I don't have influence. He creates influence. There's a clock ticking. Nobody can see the clock ticking. He can. So he tries to utilize the clock. And then people aren't instantly leading, following his leadership. And it would be easy to say, man, this just isn't going to work. But it is. And that brings us to the next principle. Leaders see before others do. See, in Acts 27, 13, and 15, it says, when the south wind blew softly. See, all the people could see is that it seemed perfect weather to set sail. Everything seemed perfect. Everything was right. Everything was just the way it should be. But leaders see before others see. Leaders see further than others see. Leaders see sooner than others see. In fact, if you're in a room and someone sees sooner than you and further than you, they're the leader. Leaders always see further than anyone else. Leaders see sooner than anyone else. And that's what's happening here. Now, everything on the surface said, this is great. We got the perfect weather. We got the perfect time. Everything's fine. But it says, but not long after. Everything was perfect for a short period of time. But leaders see what's coming next. Leaders see further. So leaders see before others see. And that's what's happening here. And it says, not long after, a headwind arose. They found themselves in the middle of what we would call a hurricane. So the Apostle Paul begins to find himself in a problem. But that's where most leaders find themselves. In fact, he finds himself in a problem that could have been stopped if they would have listened earlier. But people don't listen to people without influence. It takes time for influence to come. People don't react when the clock is ticking as fast as maybe I would like. And in here, people don't always follow the first time you attempt to lead. But he's beginning to see further. Now, what's going to happen is they find themselves in this moment, and it says, and when they had taken it on board, they used cables to undergird the ship. This is verses 17 through 20. Fearing that they should run aground, they struck sail and so were driven. And because were exceedingly tossed, the next day they lightened the ship. Now, here's the thing. This storm keeps getting worse. They're doing everything that they can. They're undergirding the ship, making sure that it has extra support. They're not only doing that, but now they've put the sails. They're trying to go, and they're basically trying to run with the wind. And then in the midst of it, it says, on the third day, they started throwing things overboard. Whenever people are in problems, they will always throw things overboard. I've watched people throw their marriage, their kids, their job, their career, their life. I've watched them throw everything. That when a problem happens and they can't manage it, they throw everything overboard. And can I say to you as a leader, it's our right to let go of everything, but you can never let go of your faith. No matter how big the problem is, how enduring the problem seems, never let go of your faith. And that's what's going to endure in here is they start doing all the natural stuff. Well, we're going to give this up. We're going to give this up. We're going to simplify this. We're going to go after this. But the simple truth of the matter is you can let go of a lot of things, but you can never let go of your faith. You can never let go of your faith. But for many people, faith is the first thing they let go of. Well, I believe God and it just didn't work. Well, God's just disappointed me. If there's really a God, I wouldn't be going through this. Can I tell you? Paul's in a storm. But let me tell you about storms. Jesus walked on the water in the middle of a storm in Matthew chapter 14. In Mark chapter 4, Jesus was asleep on a boat and he woke up and he spoke peace to a storm. Can I tell you, Jesus was in storms. Paul was in storms. Now, let me just connect the dots. If Jesus had stormy days and Paul had stormy days, there's a good chance you and me are going to have stormy days. But the one thing we never do in a storm is we never let go of our faith. So he's seen further. He saw what was coming. People didn't listen. Now they're discarding. They're doing everything natural they know to do, except Paul did not let go of his faith. Now, when you don't let go of your faith, that's going to position you. It says, but long after abstinence from food, this is verses 21 through 25, Paul stood in the midst of them and said, men, you should have listened to me. Yeah, they should have. They could have avoided a lot of things. How many of us as leaders know that if people would listen to us early on, there's a lot of hardship, difficulties, challenge, disappointments that could be missed. It doesn't mean you'll miss everything, but you can miss some things if you will listen early on. These people didn't. Now what is he going to do? He's going to start leading out loud. Now, when he was just a prisoner and it was good weather, they wouldn't listen to him. But now that there's a storm, see, here's one of the characteristics of a leader. You can tell the size of a leader by the size of problems people give them. The size of a leader is always determined by the size of a problem. First of all, if no one brings you problems, you're not a leader. If people just bring you small problems, you're a small leader. But if people bring you their biggest problems, you are a big leader. See, you don't determine the size of your leadership, others do. If you have a history of helping people with problems, there will always be people who will bring them to you. And so he's going to start leading out loud. And he's going to lead out loud by doing three specific things. Three specific things. What he's going to do is he's going to speak boldly. In verse 22, he says, I urge you. He's beginning to speak boldly. No longer is this the voice of a prisoner. It's the voice of a person who has cared for people. They've begun to see it. Their problem's big. They're wanting guidance. And as a result, he begins to urge them. I urge you. I urge you. He's going to speak boldly. Not only that, he is going to speak convincingly. It says, for there stood by me this night an angel of God to whom I belong, in whom I serve. You know what he's going to say? Guys, I don't want to pull rank on you, but God is beginning to speak here. And God sent an angel. So he's speaking boldly. He's speaking convincingly. And then it says, therefore take heart. He's speaking encouragingly. He's speaking encouragingly. So what we see is now he's leading out loud. People know that he cares. People know that he saw this before they saw it. He's beginning to look at the timeline of opportunity. He's beginning to move ahead with them. And even though they didn't follow at the beginning, they're beginning to follow. And so he is speaking out loud. Another thing is, if you're going to lead in the midst of crisis, be honest. Be honest. In verses 26 through 28, he says, however, we must run aground. Now, just think, if you're on a boat, it's in the middle of a storm, you can't see where you're going. What is the worst case scenario? Wrecking your ship, running aground. What does Paul say? He says, guys, I've got some great news for you. We will run aground. We've got to. Now, why is that important? Sometimes when you're dealing with people in critical moments in their life, we want to soften everything. We want to look at that guy that has not paid attention to his marriage, and we want to soft pedal. Well, if you do this, if you do that. And sometimes you got to look and say, you know what? You blew it. You messed up. You've got to be honest. You've got to be honest with you. You got to be honest with others. Let me say this. Never be more honest with others than you are yourself. Just never do that. People will handle you being honest as long as they think you're honest about yourself. So he says, we must run aground. And so the very thing they were trying to prevent is the thing that they've got to do. He's honest with them. And then it says in there, unless you stay on the boat, you're going to lose your life. And the next principle is don't compromise. What you know to be true, don't compromise it. Don't give in. Don't let circumstances, don't let people, don't let pressure cause you to compromise what you know. So what happens here? He begins to look and he says, guys, we're going to run aground, but you got to stay on the ship. Well, if your ship is about to wreck, you know what you want to do? Get off. But he's saying, don't do that. He says, don't get off. You need to stay on. Now, here's the interesting thing. He's been honest with them. They're finally listening to him. He's telling them we can't compromise. God said the only ones that are going to be saved are the ones that stay on the ship. And so what does he do? He's delivered the tough stuff, but now he does something else. And when he said these things, he took bread and gave thanks to God. Now, think of it. You're in a ship that's caught up in the hurricane. Imagine the waves, the ups and downs. People who have never been seasick would get seasick right now. You've been in this storm for day after day after day. Now you know that you are being propelled by a storm that's going to force you aground. Everything about that seems in opposition to what you want to do, except Paul says it's what we've got to do to be in life and to save our lives. And then what Paul does is he took bread and he gave thanks. Ultimately, as a leader, you lead with your example. You lead with the things you do. You lead by what you do. You lead by how you do it. And so he took bread and he gave thanks in the presence of them all, and he began to eat. Can you imagine? These guys are looking at him thinking, you're crazy. Do you know how my stomach feels right now? But he began to eat. And do you know what happened? By his example, they began to feel better. In fact, in verse 36, it says they were all encouraged and took food themselves. His example is impacting them. And see, that's what leaders do. Leaders are honest. They don't compromise. They lead by example, and leaders impact other people. Leaders impact other people. That's what's happening with Paul. He's beginning to have an impact. Now, remember, he's a prisoner. He has no position. He has no power. He has no platform. People tell me all the time, well, if I had your position, I'd be a leader. If I had your influence, I'd be a leader. Can I tell you something? Influence is never gained through your position, your power, and your platform. If that's the reason you have influence, it's because people have never legitimately felt like you cared. Leaders impact others. And it says they were all encouraged and took food themselves. So I want you to get the picture. This guy, who's just one of the prisoners on the boat, is now leading this entire boat. In fact, if you read verse by verse, you know that there's over 200 people on this boat. This wasn't a small little boat. There's over 200 people. It's no longer the captain. It's no longer the centurion. It's no longer the owner of the boat. They all had influence at the beginning. Why? Because they had power, position, and they had a platform. But now that all those things are gone, one person is leading. The person who never based his influence on the three things people do. And now he's become an example. He's eating. Let me just also interject this. Leaders are examples in the most everyday things. He's eating. Eating's not a big deal. But he's become an example and one of the most everyday things. So, leaders impact. So we see him beginning to lead out loud. He begins to lead by being honest. He leads by saying there's some things we can't compromise. He leads by example, and he leads and he starts having impact. But then in verse 41, but striking a place where the two seas met, they ran aground, and the prow stuck fast and remained unmovable, but the stern was being broken up. So the one part of the boat remained intact, what did that give them? A bridge to get out. The back part is beginning to fall apart. You can't go backwards in life. Let's just put it that way. And it says in the midst of that, they began to get out and they ended up on dry land. Here's what we find out. Leaders survive storms. Jesus was in storms. Paul was in storms. You'll be in storms. But leaders survive the storms. Storms happen to good people, bad people. They happen to spiritual people, non-spiritual people. But the difference between all of those is when you're a profound leader, you make it through storms. And when you're a leader and you make it through storms, other people make it. And that's what happened with Paul. He went from no one to someone. He went from nowhere to somewhere. Why? Because he had learned to lead. And he led in the most profound areas and the most profound times. If you're struggling as a leader, I guess the moral of this story is pray that the people around you have some big problems. Because that's what happened with Paul. When people have big problems, they come to big leaders. And so everything that we've read is just a biography. It's just a living moment within the life of Paul. And what leaders learn is they take living moments from other people and they wrap their arms around them so that they can learn how to conduct yourself, how to model yourself, how to begin to manage yourself in the most difficult circumstances. Now, to be honest, if you're a pastor, you could take this lesson, you could divide it up, you could unpack it a little bit deeper, which I didn't do here, and you have a three-part series on how do you handle stormy days. If you're a leader, it gives you an example of the extreme crisis of what you do, that when people don't listen and things get worse, what do you need to do to make sure that your leadership is profound? But all of these are played out in a living moment. And going back to the axiom is this. Leaders are readers, but they love reading about other people's lives where they can see what they saw, feel what they felt, think what they thought, and then make a decision. How would I do in that moment? Put yourself in other people's shoes. That's what reading does. That's what biographies do. Put yourself in that. All of that to say, I think that this is a great lesson on leadership in action. But what I also know is that you're a great leader and you're going to have leadership in action. Thank you so much for joining me. Again, my new book, Keys to Effective Living, is available. The hard copies are finally in. You can go to my webpage and you can order them. Also, on October 31st, I will be doing a roundtable in Columbus, Ohio. You know anyone in the Ohio area, you know anyone in the surrounding states, let them know. This is going to be a great, great time. I'm unpacking my newest information. It'll be different than any of the roundtables that we had so far this year. And I just think it's gold. I think we're going to cover some things that will be awesome and will be impactful. And so with that being said, I want to encourage you, if you haven't signed up for that, get signed up for it. You can go to GeraldBrooksMinistries.com. Thank you so much for joining me for this podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Gerald Brooks Leadership Podcast. If you'd like more information on Dr. Brooks's books, audio, or speaking engagements, please go to GeraldBrooksMinistries.com.